How's it going?
It's going great. How are you?
I'm doing great here in this here Pizzone, where we make this podcast each and every week called Painting with Stream.
Love the Pizzone.
It's great in here. It's getting hotter in the Pizzone.
It's getting hotter, all right.
Yeah, I'm finding my game room is getting hotter as the weeks go on. We have the AC. We've had a couple nights of glorious AC going on. How are you feeling in the living room? Are you doing okay?
I'm very comfortable.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm sweating up a damn storm here. My lower back is
swamp. It does get warm. Yeah. I mean, it does get warm in here, even with the window open.
Yeah.
So, you know, whenever you want to turn on the AC, feel free. I just don't want it to be running all the time.
Not all the time. We'll put it on the eco whatever thing, so it's like it just gives us a little burst just to keep it regulated.
Maintenance.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I was telling you, I think like the whole time until we lived here, like when I was in college and lived in Minnesota, I had AC and I just think I always had it on all the time. Even if I would like leave for vacations and just leave the AC going.
Didn't you notice like a ridiculous bill?
Probably. I mean, I could be totally wrong. Maybe I was turning it off. But, like, in my mind, I don't ever remember, like, being cognizant of the AC situation.
Okay.
Whereas, like, when I was a kid, every single...
Further develop the storied history of your weird idiosyncrasies.
Well, I distinctly just remember as a kid, whenever I'd be, like, leaving and I would open the door and be like, oh, hey, Dad, by the way, if the door was open and the AC was on, my dad would just nonstop, oh, just saw a quarter roll out the door. Oh, there goes a nickel,
which
just rolling out the door.
Which makes it even more surprising that you wouldn't be aware of whether or not you left it on all the time.
Or maybe I wanted freedom once I was on my own. I wanted to just run the AC as a
tiny
yeah,
little
fuck
rebellion.
You, Dad. Like, yeah, I'm going to run the AC.
Show him.
Yeah, this will get him.
Eating vegetables.
Yeah, yes, leaving the house. Yes. We did a Zoom call with some friends and my father today.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a master of avant-garde Zoom framing.
Oh, yeah.
And prop comedy involving his robe that he's walking around in.
Yeah, you really get... like minimalist shots, really mm-hmm. nicely framed minimalist shots with a tiny Paul head in the corner and just a white background.
Yep, which is, oh,
I
a lot of
the
ceilings.
Ceiling.
Yeah, totally ceilings.
Or like way up close.
Yeah, yeah, directly like up his nostril, or him smoking on the deck with like an upward shot. He's really
thoughtful about it. It's obviously an allegory for social distancing. I mean, we're simultaneously so far away that we're just a little dot on someone's, computer screen.
Yeah, he's just a perfectly
framed
shot.
But also, it's making us a lot closer.
It is.
So you get all that. It's very, he's an artist.
He is. It's such a weird thing that, like, we find ourselves being more in touch with people during this because we're doing Zoom calls and things like that that we don't
think,
really
I think
do.
A lot of people can say that right now.
Yeah, totally. So, hey, that's a positive that can come out of this whole thing.
Definitely.
Yeah. So, and another positive is we have, I was going to say we have more time, but we're both still working. So, thankfully. So, like, it's not like all of a sudden, like, what are we going to fill the time with? It's like, no, we're still working full schedules.
I think a lot of people are probably, I mean, those who aren't affected by it probably could say a similar thing. But I think it's more just when you're not working, like, because usually people would fill that time by going out with their friends or whatever, going on dates, you know, just leaving the house or having parties or what have you. You know what I mean? And there's just none of that. That whole part is removed from the equation.
Yeah, I wasn't doing video calls and, like, streaming on Twitch damn near nightly when we were in New York City and things were normal because mm-hmm. it's like, oh, me and my hearty will grab some drinks after work. I mean, you know, then by the time I get home, it's like, oh, let's hang out for an hour and then we'll go to bed.
That
you
being
know?
Said, I think that this is probably something, the Twitch stuff is probably something you were going to continue doing.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
The quarantine.
Yeah, the schedule, you know, once I'm on the road again, whenever mm-hmm. that is, will be different for sure. But no, I'm in it. Twitch.tv/Jan Reichert.
Yeah.
Join the fun. That's my tag. I didn't think of a tagline, so I just said that.
Join the fun?
That's not good. I mean, that's why I immediately was like, oh, man, I didn't have time to think of it. I just said join the fun.
That isn't even funny.
Hey, kids, let's meet up in the Twitch land. No, that's too long.
Join the fun?
Catch you on the Twitch side.
All right.
Yeah, is that better? Catch you on the Twitch side?
It's better than join the fun.
I don't know why that's like the most generic placeholder. Like, here's where the tagline would go.
Yeah.
I don't intend for join the fun
You're
to be my tagline.
You're a master of naming things. I'm sure you can come up with a great tagline.
I do like naming things.
Yeah. You're so good at it.
Thank you.
You have a knack for it.
I was asking you, as of this recording, in a few hours, I'm going to try to test a thing with Mike Mahardy where we play Command & Conquer against each other while we drink White Claws. And I was thinking about calling it Command and Clonker, spelled C-L-A-W.
Will Mahardy be taking part in the White Claw stuff?
Well, I've got a test run with him after this, so I should tell him that that is not optional. yes.
Does he even like White Claw?
He is game for any kind of dumbass thing.
Okay. Like, and yeah, he seems really up for whatever.
When we were in San Francisco for Game of the Year last year, we definitely got a bunch of White Claws and watched MacGruber on a laptop. So he's game, for sure. Get real dumb.
He's a sport, that Mahardy.
Yes, he is. So we watched some stuff for podcast.
We did.
This one has a connection to us and our history in that the movie we've seen the most together, MacGruber's probably close.
Yeah, but it's Face Off.
It's Face Off. Yeah. We've seen Face Off the most, which is John Woo doing his John Woo
1997.
Thing.
1997.
Yeah.
We're right smack in the summer of Nick Cage, right?
Oh, the summer of Cage.
Was it the summer of Cage, right? It wasn't three years.
There was Rock and Con Air, and then Face Off was like the next year, I want to say.
Okay, so we were peak Nick Cage.
It could be. He was real hot and heavy around the summer of either like 96, 97, or both, I want to say.
Remember when we saw... Did we see Face Off at Nighthawk Cinema and get brunch one time? Yeah, we did do that.
That was like the Action
97.
Brunch, Action Brunch?
Yeah, that was great.
Which I didn't realize until now, we are really continuing our John Travolta being the most prolific panning the stream subject.
Definitely.
We've watched a lot of Travolta.
Yeah,
even
it's
like
just fun.
Under the Radar, like Blowout. Okay, let's go now. Blowout,
yeah.
The Fanatic,
yeah.
Battlefield Earth.
Mm-hmm.
Gotti. I feel like there's more. That's four. So this is at least the fifth one.
Yeah.
Quite possibly more. This is Broken Arrow. Mm-hmm. That's why we brought up John Woo and John Travolta. This was actually John Woo's...
second American movie.
Right. Was it Hard... Hard
Target.
Hard Target. That's the Van Damme one, right? Mm-hmm. I have not seen that. We watched Hard Boiled.
Right.
The tequila...
And I wasn't crazy about that.
You weren't hot on it. I appreciate it for the historical value of... Did we do an episode on that?
No.
No, we didn't. Let's touch on it real quick here.
Sure.
I appreciate it for what it did for action cinema mm-hmm. and that it had a panache and a style that you did not really see.
Yeah, I appreciate the historical significance of it, but, you mm-hmm. know, just from a contemporary standpoint.
Yeah, the bar has been raised, in part by John Woo himself. But there is something about, like, John Woo is a great action director, but the beauty of Face Off, specifically, comes from... his action, just really over-the-top style of directing, but also him directing, like, guys like Travolta and Nick Cage.
Oh, definitely.
That's the magic,
yeah.
What do you call it? The magic sauce? The magic combination, whatever it is. all those elements are in place here.
The magic scramble.
John Woo's magic scramble coming to a theater near you. I pitched this to you because we were trying to decide between a few different movies.
Yeah, we have this like running list of possibilities for Panning the Stream, all really interesting, fun sounding.
Yeah, and we plan on getting to most of them.
Yeah.
We've got a lot in the on deck circle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was basically telling you the other night, like, okay, we can go for this movie, which is like a really like classic kind of psychological sci-fi film, which we may get to, so I don't want to spoil it here, but it's great. Or we can do this movie here that's like 70% Face-Off.
Mm-hmm.
And would you say now that you've seen Broken Arrow, is that a fair calculation?
Well, I think it was... No, I don't think, because I think Nick Cage and John Travolta were such a huge part of what made Face Off great. I mean, the John Woo touches and the John Woo tropes are essential, of course. As you said, it's the magic scramble.
Yeah,
but
of course.
I think that like not having Travolta or Cage there, it would be like without serving the magic scramble without any salt. It would be
no cheese in the scramble.
Yeah,
yeah, it's the hot sauce.
Yeah.
But he's honing, like, Travolta's kind of honing his sassy bad guy thing here.
He always, whenever he's a bad guy in a John Woo movie, based on these two movies, he's always, like, this kind of, like, rambly, silly, evil guy. Like, no regard for human life, but just, like, silly and shooting the shit and, like, you know, really just, like, what do they call it? Like, devil without a...
Care.
Cause or whatever
yeah.
it is.
Well, that's the classic Kid Rock album, but Devil Without a Care, okay. Yeah.
Is that really what I was thinking of when
Devil Without a Cause? Well, I think that's also a phrase, okay. But it's a Kid Rock classic album.
God, I hope that's not the case.
Yes. Yeah, you're right. It's like he wants to, like in his head, he's like, okay, I'm playing like a sociopath. I don't care who I kill.
Right.
But also I'm like, I'm making jokes and wee-hee, I'm having fun, you know?
Yeah, that's another thing for the John Woo movies that I saw. I mean, I think Hard Boiled is actually the exception. I feel like his characters never have any depth. John Woo's. They're always just the most superficial, like good guy, bad guy. Good guy, in the case of Face Off, good guy. He's a family man.
Yeah.
He has a really like modest wife. He goes to church. He's religious. Good guy.
Isn't this religious?
Evil guy, yeah. Doesn't care about religion.
Yeah.
You know, does a lot of drugs.
Yeah, hang out with drug dealers.
Yeah.
Like, man, we got fucking guns and drugs.
Kills without regard. Yeah.
I'll shoot this kid on a merry-go-round.
Is a terrible father. You know what I mean? Just like the most surface level, like, I'm an evil guy stuff.
Yeah.
That I think is a trope of John Woo's as well. That like is just as prevalent as the doves and the slow motion walking into new scenes. I just want to say I consider Hard Boiled an exception because I feel like he actually developed the main character more, from what I remember.
It's less campy.
Yeah,
like his American stuff is definitely campy and. I feel like you would lose something with his American movies if he was, like, trying to make it, like, deeper characters. Because, like, the way they are now, they're, like, anime villains or good guys, you know? Mm-hmm. It's just like, look at Caster Troy in Face Off. He's mm-hmm. just a fucking ridiculous anime villain.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the movies that had come out and the action movies that had come out in America around that time, I mean, if he just was studying American cinema, specifically action movies, like he would probably, if he had a bulleted list of like the characteristics of these types of movies, like the most successful ones, you'd probably look at like an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie or something, just like ton of explosions, you know.
One-liners.
One-liners. But like, I think obviously a key to like those really successful 80s and 90s action movies, like Commando and, you know, Die Hard is just how naturally charismatic, like Bruce Willis, just for example, and Arnold Schwarzenegger
yeah.
is. Like, they have that natural charisma that I think, like, lends a depth to the characters, even if the writing lacks it. But John Woo, I mean, probably just didn't really consider that so much. So he just laid on this just heavy smear of evil and good guy in lieu of, like, a proper, you know, in lieu of, like, real charismatic individuals and backstories and character development, and like they're bad from the jump, they're good from the jump.
Yeah, and like that carries across to the dialogue and everything too. Like I feel like it's really like a lot of the dialogue feels like it's from a PlayStation 1 game, like from like a Resident Evil.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much just like,
ain't it cool?
Yeah, yeah, I'm bad guy, I'm gonna kill people. Ain't it cool?
There's I'm crazy. One, ain't it cool?
There's the one where the explosion goes off and it cuts to John Travolta and like hanging out of a jeep and he goes, "I said, goddamn, what a rush." It's like, this is so unnatural. Like,
it's so unnatural. And not to mention, John Travolta is such an idiot in this movie. He has so many opportunities to kill Christian Slater.
Yeah.
But he's just babbling on and on. Like, just fucking shoot him in the head. Christian
Slater, yeah.
It's like becomes apparent pretty soon, like into the movie, that we learn he's just a pilot. He hasn't really killed anyone. Like he kills the first guy he's ever killed in the movie. So he's inexperienced. He'd be very easy to kill.
Yeah.
But John Travolta just has to ham it up all the time. Or what's his name? Dex.
Oh,
Carlton?
I'm sorry. I wrote it down here. It's Vic Deacons.
Yeah.
Vic Deacons. Woo's good at naming characters.
Vic Deacons and Riley Hale.
Yes. And Giles Prentice. And yeah, he is a total idiot in this, but also John Travolta in this movie, Vic Deacons, is an expert boxer. He is a pilot of stealth aircraft that costs billions of dollars. And also, at one point, he talks about the nuke, and he's talking about like the way it's like set up for the like D, you know, the D whatever, the buttons or whatever.
Right.
He's like, oh yeah, I did this to the circuit boards for the nukes. And it's like, wait, you built a circuit board for the nukes, or you altered it?
Yeah, and he's also just like a master strategist to be able to plan out this entire thing and like account for all these possible contingencies.
Yeah, and all of this while overcoming his childhood what's the word for insecurities about only being able to talk while showing all of your teeth.
Yes. That is so characteristic of John Travolta playing an evil guy.
Yeah, he thinks that's what's evil. So I'm going to talk like this and show my teeth. What do you think about that?
Yeah, like just a half smile through anything.
Yes, talking directly through his teeth. Oh, man. So, yes. Okay. The movie, by the way, it's on Hulu with the HBO add-on. I think you can just watch it on Hulu as or on HBO Go as well. Travolta is Vic Deacons. Christian Slater is Riley Hale. Mm-hmm. They're just pilot dudes. Frank Whaley is the guy that you said always looks like he's like realizing something. That's the character.
Oh, in the that's Giles.
Giles Prentice. So, do you recognize him from anything?
He looks familiar, but I couldn't place him.
I looked him up, and he's a character actor in a ton of different stuff. Mm-hmm. Most famously, he's Brent from Pulp Fiction. Like, look at the big brains on Brent.
Oh, okay.
I always thought it was Brad.
What else has he been in? Do you remember?
Did
you
lots of little TV okay. spots. Looks like he's gotten a lot of work.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's the guy that's like, you know, that Travolta. Oh, weird. Oh, yeah, Travolta in Pulp Fiction.
Oh, yeah.
Him and Sam Jackson come in and the famous shot with the guns. That's him.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Also, Kurtwood Smith, who's the bad guy from RoboCop, plays the Secretary of Defense in this.
Mm.
Which, again.
Red from That 70s Show.
Yeah, yeah. Just made me think of RoboCop. And
I can't believe he was the Secretary of Defense.
Mm-hmm.
He was such an idiot. He was clueless.
Yeah, he's like, wait a minute. Do you have to type in codes to decode this thing?
Yeah,
there are nukes on that plane?
He's the Secretary of Defense, and he doesn't know anything about these nukes.
Yeah.
Not to mention. Just the underlying plot of the movie I have a problem with, because why would they take nukes on a training exercise? Like, actual nukes.
Yeah, I was confused about, are they trying to test the radar capabilities of these new stealth bombers? Because I think they said B-3 stealth bomber. I don't know if that's a real thing or not. I think I always heard B-2. But I thought it was like, okay, let's see if this shows up on radar. We're testing this new stealth aircraft. But yeah, you're right. Why? We don't need active nuclear weapons on this, if that's
yeah.
the case.
Also, why do these nuclear weapons have these giant, movie-ready timers attached to them?
Yes, very visible timers.
Why would nukes need any timers at all?
That's only for movies, because no one would ever, if a timer was going down, nobody would be there to
see it. Yeah, no one would be there to see it.
No, especially on a nuke that you drop from an airplane. It's not like a Castor Troy, you know, E3 bomb.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, lots of issues with the logic in this film.
Yeah, why does this park ranger not only carry a gun, but carry a full pocket full of loose ammunition?
It reminds me of when Homer went to Hank Scorpio's place to work there, and Hank Scorpio's like, do you have any sugar for his coffee? And Homer just reaches into his pockets and has just handfuls of loose sugar. It's like, why was that in there? But yeah, she just has a pocket full of bullets.
Yeah.
Samantha Mathis.
Pocket full of
Peach.
Bullets.
Yes.
That's a good name for a movie.
Great Metallica album. Or Megadeth closer? I don't know. Samantha Mathis was Princess Peach in the great Mario Brothers film. It's not great. We should probably watch that at some point.
It's not great.
It's really not great.
How fortuitous is it that, like, the one ally Christian Slater has in this film is this smoking hot 20-year-old park ranger.
Who, like, knows karate and can hold her own and, like, fights against Howie Long or whatever.
Doesn't need to be protected.
Yeah. I mean, hell, she's pretty cool in it.
Yeah, she's really cool. I'm just saying it's very, very fortunate for
yeah.
him.
Yeah, we've been to national parks before, and it's always just some dude that's just... It's just some 40-year-old dude with a gun.
Yeah.
Like, I'm the park ranger.
Yeah.
Yes. Also, French Stewart was in this movie.
What? Where?
Yeah.
Where?
He plays IR crewman. So I think he's just a background guy, maybe in one of those, like, military rooms
okay.
or something.
Gotcha.
But, like, I guess French Stewart wasn't really known. This is pre-Third Rock and Love Stinks? Love Stinks, the
and,
classic.
Inspector
Gadget. The second one, because what, Matthew Broderick was the first one?
I don't know.
First live action.
I don't know, Dan.
Okay,
I don't know about it.
We'll cover it in depth. I was thinking this should have been, when we went to Utah, speaking of the national park, mm-hmm. we went to Utah, which was just...
Zion.
And then, yeah, Zion National
Park. It was incredible.
Just one of the most ridiculously fun trips we've ever been on.
Mm-hmm.
But we were there with a bunch of friends, you know, ex-game informer guys, Tim Turry, Ben Hanson, Jeff Pork.
Rented
and
this huge, amazing woods house.
Dave and Katie, if you're listening, we had a great time there. So yeah, we had this big, awesome house in the woods that we all split, and we were like, we should watch some movie that's on streaming, that's like Utah-y.
Yeah.
And we watched Joyride. Which was, who
was
that?
Was that even in Utah?
I think it was.
Okay.
Or it was like, it was kind of a road trip. I don't remember. There's like a killer. Was it James Vanderbeek?
James Vanderbeek was in it. Taya Leone? No, not Taya Leone. The actress that was in
it.
It was like a very, very 1990s actress.
I forgot damn near everything.
Anyway, we should have watched Broken Arrow.
Yeah, this is much more like everything looked like Zion
yeah,
National Park.
They were in the canyons and everything. Yeah.
There's also an extended period where they're like in these like kind of cave things or mines.
Mm-hmm.
And it just, I can't count how many video games I've played that have that setting.
Mines.
Like, you know, like a Resident Evil 4, like minecart and like kind of sandy desert mines and stuff. It just reminded me of so many games.
Can I just say too, before I forget, I really, I'm not a huge fan of mines in video games, but one, like, location that is frequently occurring in video games that I really like, locker rooms.
Why?
Because you can often inspect, open up, and see what's inside of many lockers, and there's usually a lot of items to be had.
Have you been doing that in Final Fantasy VII?
Well, playing Final Fantasy VII made me think of it because I was in a locker room at one time, but they didn't have any items in the lockers. But
I guess lately, yeah, there are areas in Final Fantasy, I think, that have the lockers. But I just played through Resident Evil 3 Remake as well.
And Resident Evil 2 Remake had a lot of important lockers.
A lot of lockers going on. Some have codes on padlocks. Yeah. Always a fun time.
Sorry about that little tangent.
That's okay. Hey, I know you're enjoying Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I really am.
It's really good. I like it a lot.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Also, there's a part that confused me. Tell me if I saw this wrong, but I thought... So here's the thing. They're taking the stealth thing out with nukes on it. Mm-hmm. And it's Travolta and Christian Slater. Travolta's the bad guy. He basically knocks out Christian Slater, ejects him from the plane so he can go steal his nukes. He's basically... This movie's about holding nukes hostage from the government and getting them to pay for the nukes. They eject in what seems like the dead of night. Mm-hmm. Like, just completely pitch black. And then some bullshit happens, like, oh, the Secretary of Defense, like, where's the nukes or where's the plane? And then all of a sudden we cut back, it's the morning, and Christian Slater's, like, floating down. Like, was he floating down for, like, 5 hours? Did I see that right? That was weird, right?
Yeah, it was weird. It did look like he was just touching down when we meet up with him again.
Yeah. And then from that point on, it's just a whole bunch of, like, John Travolta hamming it up as an evil guy. So Christian Slater and Samantha Mathis are just running around trying to stop the bad guy. He's trying to get money from the government. There's one of those great scenes where there's, like, a long table of, like, government officials. And then he's, like, sent in a video. We're like, hello, I'm evil. Here's my plan. Here's what I want. Like, I love dumb scenes
Which is really mind-boggling because he talks about the reason he's doing this, he's holding these nukes for ransom, is that he wants a ton of money and that one of the people that's bankrolling the whole operation will give him, like, 5% of Volvo or something.
Yeah.
Does he really think after sending a video of himself explaining his plan to the government, his full face, full body.
Yeah. A known voice. Guy in the government.
Yeah.
Yes.
Does he really think that if he gets away with it, the government's just going to be like, well, he got us. He's in Sweden now or wherever Volvo is from.
Out of our jurisdiction.
Yeah, I guess we'll just let this guy who held nukes for ransom just let him get away with it.
Yeah, I don't understand what his plan was. It's like, I equated it to you of like, it's like if Bin Laden after 9/11, if the government was like, well, we'd love to arrest him or kill him, but he's not in the States, out of our jurisdiction, can't do anything.
I guess he won this round.
Yeah, oh man, he got out of here. Man, what a smart guy. Yeah, so not sure what Travolta's plan was. Again, lots of logic issues here. Mm-hmm. So part of his bad guy squad, which, oh my God, the bad guy squad in this movie is the most just like 90s expendable, we are evil dudes, just snickering assholes.
Howie Long being extremely tense.
Yes, constantly. I just don't know if that's his muscles.
Striation.
Oh, the striation's amazing with Howie Long here. So I distinctly remember I saw this movie in the theaters. I still have my ticket stub.
What?
For Broken Arrow. It's probably in this room, actually. In fact, I think it's probably in this box. It's my Broken Arrow ticket stub is probably a foot to the left of my face right now, along with a bunch of other ones. My Celtic Pride, Beverly Hills Ninja.
Why did you save it?
I used to keep my ticket stubs, and so I've got a bunch of just very faded old West Glen 12 Shawnee, Kansas things here.
That's
nice. I remember seeing it with my Grandpa Rich, my Grandma Ann, and we saw it at the theater, and then...
What did Grandma Ann think of Broken Arrow?
I don't remember her saying anything about it. They liked movies a lot.
That's awesome.
But yeah, I remember talking to my dad after I saw this, and because I knew my dad was a big sports guy, and I knew this was like Howie Long's, like, you know, a lot of sports guys have tried to go into movies to varying levels of success. You know, maybe one of the best, though, was, who was it?
O.J. Simpson?
No. Well, he actually did have success, but who was Kevin Durant or Kevin Garnett? I don't know basketball players' names.
Oh, Uncut
Kevin
Gems.
Garnett and Uncut Gems was awesome.
Yes,
I thought he was,
great.
That movie, which is coming to Netflix.
I mean, it must be hard to play yourself, right? Like, and I'm sure he isn't really that like that per se, but he was playing himself to an extent, and that's got to be a challenge.
Well, yeah, he's playing himself like a fictionalized version of himself, but like as an asshole. Mm-hmm. So that's like kind of a, because he's kind of a dick in Uncut Gems, mm-hmm. and like that's kind of an interesting thing to ask a guy to play for someone who hasn't really done movies before and is already very famous, like. Pretty cool stuff. But yeah, Howie Long. This was, I don't know if it was his first on-screen fictional appearance, but it was his, like, big time.
What do I know him from? Why do I know who Howie Long is?
He is still, he's in a lot of commercials. He's in a bunch of just, I don't know if it's Fox or CBS or who has the NFL now, but he's just, him and Terry Bradshaw, he's like, these guys have been, like, the pre-show football guys for, like, 20-plus years, you know? So, and I know your dad watched NFL, so you've certainly seen Howie Long on your television in the last several years, even. But I remember being like, because my dad was never a big action movie guy, and I was always trying to tell him, like, oh, man, The Rock was really good, or Face Off was really good, you should watch it. And he never, I don't want to. But I was trying to tell him about Howie Long. And I was like, yeah, Howie Long's in. Howie Long's a really good actor. I remember saying that to my dad, and my dad just laughing. Just, ha, okay, yeah, I'm sure he is. I'm sure Howie Long is great in Broken Arrow. Which, watching it now, maybe not great.
Not great.
I mean, not like laughably bad. I mean, he's not good. They don't give him a lot to work
no,
with.
No.
He mainly just looks large and carries things.
Yeah, he doesn't behave like a natural person, but then again, no one does in this movie.
That's true. He also gets the really famous scream effect when he gets kicked out of a train. And I'll have to look it up. It's either a great example of, I think it's the other one, not the Wilhelm scream, because the Wilhelm scream is the most famous one.
Mm-hmm. Can you do the Wilhelm scream? Is it that unique? I feel like I've seen so many movies with it in it, but I have not.
If you pulled it up, I'm sure there's like a Wilhelm.wave, and you'd be like, oh, I've heard that. This one is the one that's more like, like that's this one when he, it's a pretty cool spot when.
You sound like a dinosaur.
Oh, thank you. When Christian Slater grabs the
little rope.
That meant a lot. Thanks. Thanks for telling me I sounded like a dinosaur when I did that scream. I love you too. This is great. Kristen Slater does the Tarzan thing with the rope, and he like goes around and kicks, which it's kind of a clever thing too, because he puts like a dead bad guy on the side and they're all distracted and shooting him. Mm-hmm. It's a pretty good spot.
Mm-hmm.
But that's preceding, I think one of the best parts of this movie is that very last part where it's basically the part from Snake Eater where young Big Boss and young Ocelot are on the like plane and they're fighting as it's about to take off, but it's on a train over a bridge. I'm a sucker for a good like fist fight on like a moving thing, especially if it's on like top or there's a risk of falling. It's why the end of Metal Gear Solid 4 is just the greatest thing anyone's ever made. It's just the absolute best. But yeah, so you got this Ocelot fight going on, and then you know I'm a sucker for a good bad guy kill.
Mm-hmm.
Just my favorite thing growing up was like, how is this bad guy going to get his comeuppance? So this one, the train that they're on, because like Trolls is trying to get away with the nuke or something. The train's covered in like oil, flammable oil and like exploding barrels. I don't know why they chose this to be the nuke transport train, but like they kept showing wide spots and I was like, why are there exploding barrels all over this thing? Like I can spot those as someone who's played a lot of action games.
Yeah, it's a multiplayer map.
Yeah, yeah. And so the nuke is there. Travolta has the like remote thing to blow it up. And Christian Slater in the scuffle gets a hold of it. He does a very John Woo dive out of the moving train, turns around, which I don't think you have to be facing it. I think he did that just for style points. But he like turns around, boom, hits the thing, which like launches the missile. And because there's a part where like, I don't know what happens here, like crashes into, I think he jumps out before it crashes into another train. And so the missile, when the trains collide, goes forward and you get like a Sam Raimi missile eye view going into Travolta's chest, sending him like through the boxcar.
But Travolta jumps into it. He wants to get
He stands up. He's like, oh yeah, come on, baby. Yes. Yeah, he stands up and he's like,
because he's crazy.
He's crazy, but he also knows his fate and he's going to go out like a, you know. And so it hits him, sends him through the thing. And because Chris, which would have super killed him anyway.
Yeah.
Christian Slater didn't need to press the button.
No.
But then he blows up like basically a nuke charge that blows up a train and John Travolta. That's a good bad guy kill.
Yeah, that's pretty. There's a lot of finality to that.
Yeah, that guy's dead. I'm not a big fan of, I like it when villains that I like come back from the dead in movies. But I like the deaths in an action movie to have some finality. Where it's like, man, that guy's fucking dead.
So dead.
What can you think of one like the, what's one a good example of just like a guy who's super fucking dead?
Super fucking dead.
And Predator got nuked or nuked himself.
Yeah.
A lot of guys just get shot.
Yeah. Anticlimactic a little bit.
Val Kilmer and MacGruber super dies.
Oh, yeah. He super dies.
Yeah, he extremely dies and gets peed on.
I like in Kill Bill where Beatrice is fighting the blonde girl, Daryl Hannah.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot the name of her character. And she's missing one eye already. And then in the course of the fight, Beatrice just plucks her other eye out.
Yeah, yeah. I like that a lot.
Just leaves her to scramble.
Yeah, yeah. What was the one? We saw Skyscraper with the Rock, and I remember that
that.
Like, didn't he, like, put a grenade in a guy's pants and kick him off a roof, and then he explodes in the air?
He falls down a hole.
Yeah, and then blows
up. A high
up.
Hole.
Yeah, he falls into a building hole with a grenade in his pants after the Rock kicks him, and he blows up. I think I remember just being like, yes, yes.
Yeah, I actually remember that clearly, you reacting to that.
I'm still a huge mark for a good bad guy kill.
It's great. It's very, very satisfying.
It is. How did you feel about the movie in general?
I found it... You know, it's kind of exactly what I expected. Yeah. It was enjoyable action movie, really nothing more than that. Not deep at all. It didn't really make you think. It was just like, let's find a way, a vehicle for there to be a bunch of explosions mm-hmm. and an evil Travolta.
Yeah. I had fun. It moved quick and stuff, but it's one of those, I know it's streaming, but I've had it on Blu-ray forever and never actually opened it up and watched it.
Mm-hmm.
But now that we've watched it, it's like, I think I can give this Blu-ray to Goodwill. I don't see us watching Arrow anytime in the next, like, until Blu-ray will not be a medium by the mm-hmm. time we want to watch Broken Arrow again.
I think that's true.
So I'll give this to Goodwill.
Yeah.
So free up some space on the shelf.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's there are moments of woo Travolta, like a lot of like really hammy music notes while he's like smoking cigarettes and stuff, you know?
There was almost a dove flying scene where there was that one scene when they were, like, by the water, and there was, like, a bunch of bugs.
Butterflies,
yeah.
Yeah, because Christian Slater's trying to tell Samantha Mathis that, like, oh, there wouldn't be a Thursday. Which, Christian Slater, I always felt, was, like, doing a bad Jack Nicholson impersonation. Yeah, there's butterflies.
He's
right?
Very squinty.
Yeah, yeah. I don't have strong feelings about Christian Slater.
He's great in Heathers. Have you
I've
ever
seen
Heathers?
Heathers, no.
You haven't seen Heathers.
I always thought that was a romantic comedy.
No.
It's not?
I mean... There are elements of that, but it's kind of like super dark and
oh, really?
Funny. Yeah.
I know he's a big part of
Boyhood?
Mr. Robot.
Oh, I haven't seen that show.
I haven't either. I know people like that. I think he's a big part of that.
Yeah. I think I don't mind him. I've never liked something less because he was in it.
Yeah. Ever see Hard Rain?
No.
Probably have my ticket for Hard Rain in there too. I want to say that was 95. I think he's like a sheriff and like it rains a lot. And there's floods.
Hard.
Yeah, it's like...
this rain. God damn it, it's so hard.
I think it's just like, man, this water's rising. I hope the sheriff does something. I think there's a lot of like boats going down streets. It's not a very eventful movie, if I remember correctly.
Do you ever, when you were applying for colleges, when you were in high school, have to write like those essays that were, you know, like examples of you overcoming something or, you know what I mean? Just have you ever encountered that in your life?
I mean, I've gotten like those questions during job interviews.
Well, a lot of times college applications will have you write about something like that. Like, what's something you did that you were proud of? Like, what is your goal? You know what I mean? And in 1999, we had in New Jersey where I lived, there was Hurricane Floyd. So it just like the whole area was so flooded where I lived and no one expected it. So it was pretty disastrous. And my brother, a few years later, when my oldest brother was applying for colleges, my grandma wrote him the essay to give, you know, on his behalf. She wrote it.
Oh, really?
And, like, just completely fabricated the story about how Tommy was boat, like, rowing through the streets of New Jersey on top of, like, a trash top, like the top of a trash bin, saving people
what?
Who are drowning in the floodwaters.
And you gave this to a college?
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, it was completely ridiculous.
That was submitted?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That seems...
Just made me thought of that.
That's hilarious. I never heard that. That's great. Hopefully we'll beep his name so nobody takes away his college degree. You know.
Well, he's been to many colleges, so...
Oh, okay. All right. We're safe. All right. Well, yeah, that's Broken Arrow. I enjoyed watching it with you.
Yeah. It was good.
Check it out if you want a pretty brainless action movie.
Yeah, brainless is a good way to describe it.
And some real real hammy Travolta.
Mm-hmm.
We'll move on to the question of the week, courtesy of the Hugh Game.
All
right.
Hugh Game.
Oh, yeah. We have a theme song. That's right. Forgot. How did I forget? I have to edit that in every time. Yeah. That's Tom Monda made that song. Thank you. All right. At what age should a person be considered 100% responsible for their actions?
Hmm.
Like, what age are you past that, like, when you know better?
25.
Yeah, I might go earlier. Because, like, you know right from wrong. I mean,
you know right from wrong, but you're still, like, making mistakes and growing, like, mentally.
I mean, you're still a dumbass.
Yeah.
But you know right from wrong, so, you know, like, I was a dumbass in my early 20s, mm-hmm. and if, like, I got too... This is a hypothetical. This didn't actually happen. But if I got too drunk or whatever and it broke a window at a bar, or if I got a DUI or something, mm-hmm. which none of this stuff has happened, but, like, I should have been held responsible for that, you know?
Right, yeah.
Like, I you know better.
I know legally it's 18, but I feel like 16, 17, 18, you're still a kid. It, just because you turned 18, you're still pretty much the same person you were when you were 16, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I think that is kind of an arbitrary thing, because, you know, you're still a child and you shouldn't... I mean, you should be definitely held responsible for your actions, but as far as just, like, removed from the law and stuff... I think that once a person is like has been through enough in their life that they should know better, I think they'd probably be around 25, 24, 25.
Okay, once there's been some growth, some personal growth
and
everything.
Yeah, yeah. Going through college and all that stuff, or whatever you did instead of college.
Yeah, I'd say like 18 to 20 is about when, like, look, you're old enough, you know right from wrong. Don't steal, don't hurt people, don't, you know, don't.
Was the question, at what age should you know better?
It's should be considered 100% responsible.
100% responsible. I mean, I feel like 20, you're still in college. You could fuck up and do stupid shit in college. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's like your second year, third year in college.
Yeah, yeah. You're a dumbass still at that point.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, like, you should be held responsible, but, like, as far as, like, you know, you being completely, like, knowing 100% through your experience. Right from wrong, I think it would be a little later on.
You got some growing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
All right.
Just my two cents.
Great. And that is our question from the Hugh Game this week.
Thank you, Hugh Game.
Thank you. And thank you to our patrons on patreon.com/panningthestream.
Patrons.
Thank you so much. We keep it simple. We got one $5 tier at our Patreon.
Just one. So easy.
Gets you an ad-free version of the podcast each and every week.
Whoa.
Yeah. It gets you an early, your episodes come in a day early. You get on Saturday instead of Sunday.
Just giving that shit away.
Giving it away.
For $5.
you're seeing, you know, we did the Mortal Kombat watch party. You know, always a chance we'll come up with some fun stuff like that, mm-hmm. For patrons.
Yeah.
And then also, most importantly, you get a Bonk Who.
You get a Bonk Who.
From old Bonk herself. Bonk, do we have a new Bonk Who for this week?
We sure do, Daniel.
Hit me.
This week, we are paying homage to our dear friend, TJ.
Mm.
TJ, if you're listening, I hope this puts a smile on your face while you're doing your podcast errands or whatever. I hope that this Bonk Who accurately encapsulates who you are, TJ, as a person. And here we go.
All right.
Wasn't it TJ who told us never return lest we feel his wrath?
Jesus. What do you know about TJ that I don't? Oh my God.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Well, sit on
be
that for a while.
That guy.
Yeah. Look out for old TJ there. Mm. But thanks for your support, TJ.
Yeah. Really appreciate it, brother.
Yeah. Hope you enjoyed your Bonk Who. Yeah. Usual stuff. You can follow us on Pan the Stream on Twitter. You want to see what we're watching the next week. You can give us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts if you want to. Mm. If you like the podcast, you can go on there, give us a little review, say, hey, they're nice folks.
That'd be swell.
It's a good podcast. That helps us out. But outside of that, I think that's all I got for this week. How about you, Bunk?
I think that's it.
All right, well, let's thank Tom Miner for the theme song
and
get out of this hot pizzone.
All right, let's do it. I love you, and thank you, listeners. I'm talking to my husband when I say I love you, but I'm talking to you guys when I say thank you.
I love you, Bunk, and also thank you to the listeners out there in podcast land. And we'll be back next week.
Bye.
Bye.